Tata Mutual Fund presents Wealth Architects in association with Money Control.
Why wealth management? I mean, kind of what drew you to it?
My opinion, wealth is very vaguely defined. Wealth actually is his financial assets, it's his business, and also philanthropy.
How have you seen that HNI evolve over the last 25 odd years?
The complexity of the Indian family has become larger.
Yeah.
At the same time, the concept is very simple, that you have to grow wealth multi-generational.
Hello and welcome to Wealth Architects, building portfolios, shaping legacies, presented by Tata Mutual Fund in association with Money Control. This is a series where we go beyond markets and returns to understand the thinking that is shaping how India's wealth is advised, structured, and sustained. In this episode, we will look at a big shift that's underway in the world of ultra high net worth wealth management, moving beyond products to truly holistic single window advice. And joining us for this special conversation is Ashish Gumasta, founder and managing director of Veriquis Partners. Now, after decades of building and scaling one of India's leading private wealth platforms at Julius Baer, Ashish is now reimagining what comprehensive wealth advisory can look like for India's most sophisticated clients. Ashish, it's a pleasure to have you with us on this conversation. I'm so glad that you could take out the time. And, you know, it's good to speak with someone like you because you've been doing it for what, well over 25 years now?
30 years plus.
30 years plus. And you've done it in various capacities, right? With primarily an Indian house, an Indian financial services firm, an Indian promoter. And then you've seen what happens when, you know, the foreign banks come into the mix as well. So I think it'll be good to start by telling our viewers a little bit about your journey, what got you to financial services, and how have the last three decades been?
Thank you, Surbhi. Thank you for having me on this show. Special thanks to the Tata Mutual Fund team. I was very fortunate to come into financial services at the right time. Most of the time, right time, right place works more than your hard work. I joined DSP in 1994. Prior to that, I was in a college called Sydenham, where all the capital market stalwarts of Mumbai, from Hemendra Kothari to Uday Kotak to Nimish Kampani to a lot of the current CEOs coming from. So got a very early exposure to the stock market. And DSP was just starting a partnership with Merrill Lynch. And that catapulted me. So you got a flavor of investment banking. You got a flavor of asset management. We were just setting up a joint venture and of an asset management with DSP Merrill Lynch, which then became DSP BlackRock and now DSP. We had a lending business and we started our wealth business. So it was a very interesting 30 years. We scaled the business. By late 2000s, we were amongst the largest players in the country. And then we transitioned to Bank of America. Mid-2000s, Bank of America took a strategic decision to exit the wealth piece to Julius Baer. And that was an entry from the Americans to the Swiss, understanding the processes, systems, how to scale. So it's been a really very interesting 30-year journey where we worked across asset management companies, across investment banking, across the lending platform, and across wealth management. And actually, the evolving wealthy person today or the ultra high net worth today is actually a sum total of all of these. So as we go along the way, I'll try and share my perspective on how the rich in India has evolved and the size of opportunity which awaits quite a few of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's quite a fantastic journey, like 360 degrees, right? You've seen pretty much everything that is there to experience in financial services here. So why wealth management? I mean, kind of what drew you to it? And as you went through all of these transitions, you know, a company which was primarily an Indian company, moving towards a tie-up with the Americans in the form of Merrill Lynch and then the global financial crisis and then the Swiss, as you said. What are the big changes in the architecture, in the thinking that you noticed?
Right. So if you see India, we've seen a series of evolution. First is the financialization of the economy. Prior to the 90s, you had a huge parallel economy. And as we are going along the way, the parallel economy is coming into the system. You know, in a crude way, the black economy is becoming a white economy. You know, so as financialization of savings happen, the size of capital market opportunities increase. The second big change which has happened in India is the tech platform has connected the dots for financial players. You know, so with UPI, for Jam, etc., suddenly everything, wealth can move seamlessly. When I started my career in the Bombay Stock Exchange, there used to be a 10% arbitrage. Today, Zerodha, Grow offer these services free. So the second big change has been technology, which has played. Third is all the wealthy then started sending their children overseas for studying. So today, any upper middle class or rich family will have their children all going abroad for studying. Mm-hmm. When they came back, they brought in a newer perspective. They helped the promoters to think, which led to a lot of monetization of wealth and property. Mm-hmm. So when you put all of this together, the size of opportunity which came was very large. So I started working with a consumer company where the market cap of the company was $10 million. Today it is $15 billion. And in my view, in the next 5 years, it will become $30 to $35 billion. So that has been the size of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And in wealth, it's like the bamboo tree. Mm-hmm. You grow along with the promoter. You grow along with your client. So while you're banking for the ultra high net worth, you start working with them very early, and then you become a part of their success. Mm-hmm. If I was to define wealth, in my opinion, wealth is very vaguely defined. Wealth actually is his financial assets, it's his business, and also philanthropy. If I go back to the DSP group, Mr. Kothari has been one of the leading philanthropists in the country. So I would put, and I spent a significant number of years with him, It is the wealth of the financial assets, the business, where the real assets of the promoter lie, and then the philanthropy. So it's a combination of all three,
So how has the Indian high net worth individual changed and evolved from the mid-90s or let's say turn of the millennium, 2000? And that's when the Indian equity market really got discovered, right? And Indians really started understanding what wealth was. And retail or middle class India started getting aspirational. They wanted to move to the wealth club as well. How have you seen that HNI evolve over the last 25 odd years?
So I'll take two examples of two sectors of families which I've known, and then we'll go into the details.
Sure.
So one is a financial services group, old family, traditional broker, evolving into an investment bank, evolving into a financial services group. So then subsequently exiting their business, right? The next generation coming in, their children coming in, setting up two separate businesses for both the children. So at one end, you're managing... So
this is the which group that you're talking
about? No, I'm just giving you a broad idea of broad financial example. Services, we'll take one financial services and we'll take one manufacturing. This story can be across most financial services group. So from being a business owner, to a business where you're also raising money at one end and at the other end you're managing money, you're managing transition to the next generation. In the last few years, the next generation has taken help, and then most of these families have settled abroad. So you have a situation where you have a wealthy person now living cross-border. So from plain vanilla investing, you're now raising money for the promoter, you're working with him on his business side, you are doing cross-border work for him, you're planning the taxation for him, and you're planning succession from him. That is a huge evolution.
It's
and
a
that
full
is
a gamut size, of services.
That's
then.
The gamut of services. In a way, it's a high-end concierge service, where you're trying to put the whole value proposition to them. Similarly, consumer businesses, where the promoter was running, they reached a size, the family decided that, look, we now need to bring in a professional management. Professional management comes in. Promoters have time on their hand. They then invest in multiple operating businesses which they own. For lifestyle reasons, a lot of them decide to move overseas, marry into different cultures. And now you have multiple jurisdictions, multiple. So the complexity of the Indian family has become larger. At the same time, the concept is very simple. That you have to grow wealth multi-generational, and you've got to make sure that transition happens.
And that it is passed on, from generation to generation.
So it's a very long answer to your short question.
Fair. I mean, I guess that the basics remain the same. The complexities have increased, as you're pointing out. So, okay, now, why did you decide to go the entrepreneur way?
Right.
I mean, you were with these large financial entities and, Indian, foreign, and you were at the helm of affairs. So was there a gap? Or was it just intrinsically that it was, the entrepreneurial bug kind of bites after a couple of years?
Let's see the evolution of Indian businesses. Wherever competition has got open to Indian businesses, Indian businesses take over. When I started my career in the 90s, the top banks used to be foreign banks. Today, your top banks I mean, your main salary account will be with an Indian,
Indian
bank.
Yeah.
Look at telecom. Mm. We had 40, 45 players. Who are the top three players today, Indians? Look at cement. Every sector. So what is happening is in India, when you open up any sector to the Indian diaspora, then the Indian businesses tend to take charge of it. Wealth business traditionally had a few modes. You could understand, you had cross-border modes, you had a brand moat, there was a trust moat. But over a period of time, and especially the big revolution of AI that we are witnessing, there's a big change. So what I find today is the Indian client of ours, his needs are very different. He wants you to advise him on his wealth. He wants you to play a supporting role on his business. He wants you to be a part of his philanthropy. He wants you to make sure that you're working closely with the next generation. He wants to make sure that the whole thing is kept simple and we don't create tax complacency. And he wants to leave a legacy behind.
Sure.
Finally, what we witnessed is that when I started my career, we had one exchange. Today, there's a new exchange which has come in.
Sure.
The top 10 brokerage players are totally out of, are new and they are tech-led. And that is the opportunity that we feel. If it was 10 or 15 years ago, I would have still preferred to go to a legacy institution, 50, 100, 200 years old, and work with them. But the client of today is open to a value addition. And to us, the biggest boon has been AI, where I feel that our businesses will get redefined. So traditional banking had a global headquarter, then you had a region headquarter, then you had a country head, then you had a region head, then you had a business head, then you had a manager, and then you had a business guy.
Yeah,
I think organizations will become very, very flat. And a lot of big institutions will have to rethink on what they do, you know. So that is the opportunity for us. The challenges, I mean, I can cover it now also a bit about how the wealth industry is shaping up. But the challenge...
We'll talk about that. So basically, from what you say, it seems that some of the boutique wealth management firms, perhaps they're a little more nimble than large institutions to when it comes to catering to client needs.
Right. So I'll very quickly give you a perspective of the wealth industry and that will lead to this answer. Today... when we started Wealth many years ago, there were fewer players. You know, there was an Indian bank, there was us, there were a few foreign players. Today, anybody and everybody has jumped onto the Wealth bandwagon. You know, you throw a stone and it virtually hits a wealth manager. In my opinion, I may be wrong, but in the next 5 to 10 years, 5 to 10 big players will emerge. And those necessarily don't need to be the old ones, you know.
Okay.
And that is the opportunity. So you can be a boutique player, but if you're focused, it doesn't mean you will be a there, you know. So there will be consolidation. There is margin pressure in the industry. There is commoditization of products. So you will have 5 to 10 really large players, and then you will have a few boutique players. But we will have to work towards scale and size. Not having scale and size may not be a good idea.
And you mentioned AI. So how is AI becoming an enabler in sort of, you know, getting to that scale and size?
Your product and your backend cost can be compressed very significantly. Today, a lot of product information, I would have had a 40, 50 member product team. Today, I can do it with two. My partner, Roshi Jain, who has joined me from HDFC Asset Management, was telling me that two of our analysts today are able to do work which normally 7 to 8 analysts would have been required for it.
That's a dramatic change.
So one is of course, that product cost comes down. Secondly, operational and servicing changes significantly. Thirdly, we can give real-time data to a relationship manager. So traditionally, it would take us 8 to 10 years to build a good relationship manager. I think we can now do it in 4 to 5 years, you know. So it'll compress the time. But the culture has to be imbibed, you know. So if you're able to imbibe the culture, then I think these are the big changes which will bring down the cost. It'll make the advisor much more intelligent. But I still feel the personal touch will be required, you know. So it just cannot be a tech-led model, you know. There will have to be a... personal element which will be required.
Can't be a robot talking to people. At the end of the day, it's about people's money, lives, businesses. So I guess that human touch will perhaps always be there.
And teams. Yeah, they'll have to operate in teams because the size and scale and the complexity will be so high that traditional model was there was one advisor, But I think there will be teams which will be required to handle these families.
Okay. You also mentioned in terms of how the marketplace is evolving, the increasing complexity, right? So this cross-border, and then even in terms of investments, the choices have really exploded from local to alternates to, you know, international investing.
Right.
Within the investing ecosystem, mm-hmm. What is your approach, and what is it that you think that clients are really seeking? And how do you see the next couple of years play out as we, you know, keep getting more options and more products come in the market?
Right. So the evolution of our industry was we mm-hmm. first had brokers on the Bombay Stock Exchange. Mm-hmm. Brokers became investment bankers. Mm. Investment become managers became asset managers. Mm-hmm. So it's always product led because mm. the asset management company always had a product to go to a client with. Mm. Now, unfortunately, the wealth industry actually... the lesser you churn your portfolio, the better it is. Mm. So I feel that there should be more simplicity. Like we had a fund called US64, which later on got evolved into balance funds.
Yeah.
Today, a balance fund does a job of balancing your portfolio. Mm. But if you just give the client a balance fund and you hold him through ups and downs and stay with him, the client feels you haven't provided value addition. Mm. So product complexity came in because the advisor also has to earn a fee. As our client evolves, yeah. and he focuses that, is my advisor giving a consistent return over a period of time? Mm. I think the industry should do well. There should be lesser of product ideation and there should be more of simplicity. And simple things. So what happens is in India, there are times when you see a huge gap, there's always a huge gap in pricing. Mm. So there was a time when the pharma sector was grossly undervalued. Then came the engineering sector. Then came the PSUs. Then we had a defense companies. Mm. So there are always opportunities. Then came gold. So what we did correctly with our clients was whenever we had these disparities, we could convince our families and take simple investment bets and made sure that those bets are sizable. Because when I started my life, I had 100 rupees. Mm. Today, I may have 20 times or 100 times that money.
Yeah.
Similarly, the size of investing has to be done. So it's the size of bet, the nature of bet, and the simplicity with which it's done, I think. That would be our approach to managing money.
So now talking about who's the decision maker. So this is, I mean, these are the solutions that you kind of go with and you're hand-holding all these families or individual, you know, entrepreneurs in their journey. Mm-hmm. But who is the decision maker and what is the role that Gen Z in these families is playing, or the next gen basically of the families playing in these sort of discussions?
So I would break it up into three segments. Mm-hmm. At one end, we have our traditional families where the patriarch listens to everybody and then he's the decision maker.
Yeah.
He's worked very hard to build this wealth and he would like to still control it.
Yeah.
He would still like to have a significant stay in it.
Yeah.
In India, most patriarchs continue till their late 80s, even early 90s, you know, and they play an active role. You know? The second is a family where the next generation has come in. Mm. They've got empowered. They are learning the business and they want to interact with you. They do some right things. They do some wrong things there. And the final are these youngsters who are coming in. It's a great learning working with Gen Z. I feel they are more proactive. They are more risk takers. And my son has been brought in a lot more comfort and certainty than I have, you know. So their ability to take decisions and risks, I think, are much more, you know. So we have to tailor our proposition depending on the nature of the client, you know. Typically, a patriarch will be more long-term oriented, more relationship oriented. He would see the bigger picture with more conservative returns. He has seen a lot of ups and downs in his life. The Gen Z would be more product oriented, more aggressive, wanting to do a lot more.
Yeah.
I think everyone goes through a cycle in this period, you know. So,
and women, through these last 30 years of your experience with all of these families,
yes,
how has the voice of the woman evolved, if at all, if it has?
It has. It has. Yes, yes. So I find women, very savvy investors. Mm-hmm. They take their time to think. Mm-hmm. But once they make their decision, I find they are great decision makers. Surprisingly, I find some of them also, not surprisingly, actually, they are great traders also. You know, they have a great feel for the markets and they are able to trade. There's a family we know where the lady is the best. I mean, I would say the best derivative person I would have come across. You know, so there's a big change coming.
Okay.
At the same time, I find they are able to take a long-term approach. They don't monitor the portfolio so regularly. Mm-hmm. See, the challenge of our industry is like you buy a piece of land, you don't see it for 10 years.
Correct.
Here, every day, the portfolio comes to you.
Yes.
And you have a mark-to-market problem. Now, if you watch your portfolio every day, 1 hour, I have the money control app. I have a temptation of seeing it every day. And so there I find women as more long-term oriented and less perturbed, you know, by such circumstances.
Interesting. Yes. But good to know that they have a seat at the table and they're part of these conversations.
Oh, there's
right?
a big change coming.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. So now we're into crystal ball gazing, right? So looking at the way this environment is evolving, the wealth management business, the number of firms that are there, Indian firms have, you know, ballooned. The foreigners want to make a very aggressive comeback. I hear a lot of people, you know, looking at bigger private banking teams, so on and so forth. So the next 5 years, what is the Indian wealth management space in for?
I don't have a crystal ball, but whatever little my common sense says, I'll share with you a 5 year and a 15 year view. I think anybody who's first of all taking a 5 year view in this business is going to go wrong. Yeah, this is like setting up a consumer business. You will actually not make money in a 5 year view. Today you have brokerage firms who are in wealth management. You have investment banks who are doing wealth management. You have banks who are doing wealth management. You have manufacturing companies who are doing wealth management. You have online companies who have come into a wealth management. I think this space will see a consolidation, but 5 years later. Those who are focused, they have a value proposition which is defined and they stick to it, will succeed. You will have to keep your costs under control. You will have to have a long-term vision. You will have to laterally think about getting talent. You know, if ever you think about changing careers, then please do give us a call. You know, we'll have to think laterally about getting talent.
Really?
And that is how we built our wealth practice. Actually, we got people across sectors, across industries. People who come from outside the industry are quicker to pick up this business. And now today with AI, we can empower an advisor much more because
this is really interesting. I want to go back because typically you would think that and BFSI is such a such a focused sector, right? And you know, typically it's perceived as product complexity. So one would imagine that you only want people who are veterans and who are sort of, you know, been doing this for 15 years. But you're saying that the future is looking at talent in a lateral fashion. Why do you say that?
Because the nature of your investor is changing. Today, he needs help in an operating business. If you are in a consumer business, a marketing person can guide him much more than a financial advisor. And a lot of financial advice will today be available to you thanks to technology. So if you want to build a good organization, it's like five fingers. You know, all five fingers are not the same. You need talent across different verticals.
Very interesting.
And that's what we are looking at building. And the most important thing, the reason we were successful in the last 25, 30 years is we build a culture in the organization.
Okay.
And the right behavior has to be rewarded. Our founder had a practice that compliance or integrity violation is a strict no-no. You may be the biggest guy, the most successful guy in the country. Anything goes wrong, you're out of the company. So you build the right culture, you build the right practices, you reward the right things. And that will be, that will help us. So so I think we will have to look for talent outside. We will have to have patience. 10 years later, I see a massive consolidation in the industry. Right now, there are a lot of investors, a lot of private equity, which is wanting to come in. The size of market opportunity is large. People are going to, you know, so wealth is spreading across. Like I said, financialization of savings is coming. So multiple players will come in. But 10 years later, there will be consolidation. Anyone who gets into this play should not think of less than 5 years.
So who will survive once that consolidation era is over? Or what will it take to survive?
So if you look at history, the survivors have always been new incumbents. So if you see, look at any sector. Like I mean, like I said, I don't have a crystal ball. But whenever a crisis has happened, who is our top brokerage firm today? Number one brokerage firm. Nobody knew this brokerage firm 5 or 7 years ago. The two of them, one is unlisted, Zerodha one is just... And, So it will be a new incumbent. It may be us, it may be anybody else. Very difficult to say.
But
you've got to be focused. You've got to stick to the job. You've got to deliver the value proposition to the client. And I hope clients pay us for that, you know. So that's your answer.
So I want to end with, quick word of advice. And the first set is for people who are looking for wealth advice.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the plethora of choices, you have your bank RM calling you, you have a fintech app telling you this is where you should invest, willing to, quickly analyze your portfolio in 30 seconds. Then you have, of course, traditional firms. You have, of course, the entire mutual fund distribution network.
True.
So the question is not where I should invest. The question is, whom should I listen to?
Right.
When it comes to my investing decision.
Right. So, of course, they should listen to us. But
Of course.
But I would say, look at the vintage of the banker, the experience. Has he made wealth for himself? Because if he has been advising for 10, 15, 20 years, even if you had done some simple things, you should be wealthy. I come across people who've said, I've done 30 years of advice and they're living 30 kilometers from Mumbai and then traveling every day, you know. So so first thing is look at the
you
vintage.
Should be wealthy. And third, you should become wealthy.
I mean,
yourself.
If you have been a good advisor, you should have created wealth for yourself by doing simple things, you know. And the third thing is the process institutionalized? Is there an institution? Is the data institutionalized? Is there whatever intelligence which is from my side? Is there are there proper systems and
processes in place?
Which are there? Of course, you can do DIY, but with newer versions, I feel a combination is always better. Those who really understand this industry well can do it. But in my experience, people who are from outside financial services land up making more money than financial services people, because having sometimes excessive knowledge is
can be
harmful,
detrimental.
Can be detrimental. Not look at it very closely. You know, take a slightly longer view. Look, we came out with this concept of SIP to get people into the industry. But today, the only thing to people do is SIP. Now, a wealth manager should know when is the time to go aggressive and when he should be conservative. So so those are the calls he has to take. There are mispricing in sectors which has happened. Like today, we are very closely looking at the IT industry because there's a sharp correction in the valuations. Now, is it an investment? Is it a genuine problem? So that is the role. That is what the client is expecting. And when you do those simple things like banking, some of the banks today are trading at 20, 30 year low valuations. Now, is this a genuine problem? Or is it an opportunity for you to get your clients in? Because we've had massive FIIs selling. FIIs have sold the largest banks. Now, if it is just because of FIIs selling, this correction has taken place, then the best service you can do to your client is actually make him, if his normal allocation is 10 or 15% in financial services, take it to 20%.
Sure. So look at those opportunities.
So those are the things.
Yeah.
Look at people who can help you through it. Work with two or three people and then choose one or two of them. Let the advisor also earn fee, because as you grow richer, he should also grow with
you. That's when the interests are aligned, and then that's where he or she has the motivation to really bring you the best advice. Completely agree with that. Final word, Ashish, also for people who are looking to make a career in wealth management and wealth advisory, not just kids coming out of college, but even mid-career professionals, because as you said, there could be a lot of lateral shifts as well as the sector grows.
I think I saw this happening in the US, thanks to Merrill Lynch. I think it's the biggest opportunity for anyone wanting to build a career, but they have to invest 5 to 10 years of their life and not expect immediate returns.
Okay.
Today, what is happening is everyone wants to secure their job, take a higher salary, want stock options. It doesn't work this way. This is a business where a person is entrusting you with his life's sometimes
savings,
you know equal or more than the spouse of the person about the family, about the challenges. So you're the closest confidant of the family. And that takes time. Like if you want a bamboo tree to come up in 1 year, it's not going to happen. So come into this sector, take a 5 to 10 year view because the size and scale of opportunity is very big. Move, like if I was to start my career today, I would go to a Hyderabad. I would go to, a city outside of like maybe Mumbai, Delhi. Or if I was in Mumbai, I would focus on Andheri, If I was in Delhi, I would focus on Noida, you know, Gurgaon,
because that's where the growth is.
Yeah. So most people stick to like Nariman Point or,
South Bombay.
The audience
Bombay
may not
family.
Understand, but South Bombay, or if you're in Delhi, you want to concentrate on Aurangzeb Road. But actually the real wealth creation is all happening outside. Hindi mein kehte hain, joote ghiso. Go out and build relationships, understand the guy's problems.
Yeah.
So otherwise what happens, typically we have a KYC questionnaire. Mm. Can you take 20% loss? Now, that's not what the client wants. When you talk to him, he'll say, if this happens.
I don't want to do this.
So actually it's a behavioral science questionnaire, you've got to ask open-ended questions. You've got to meet a client of a couple of times. And that's the real understanding.
Got it.
So
got
I think it is an opportunity of a lifetime. But the person should be willing to really put in that hard work into that.
Yeah.
AI, I think, will be a great enabler for our industry. You know, I think it is an opportunity of a lifetime. If we stay focused and we don't digress, I think we should do quite well.
All right. Very, very interesting. And I'm sure that it's exciting times ahead for the wealth management sector and for investors, as have been choices and advisory also evolve. Thank you very much for taking us through some of those thoughts, Ashish. It was quite an insightful conversation. And of course, we're looking forward to more insights as we go forward. But for now, we'll call it a day on this one. Great speaking with you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, with that, we come to the end of this conversation. We'll be back very, very soon, exploring ideas and insights and individuals which are shaping India's evolving wealth landscape. Until then, goodbye.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully. Tata Mutual Fund presents Wealth Architects in association with Money Control.